Hey, Amcon, welcome back to another episode of, I don't know, what is this called? Just hanging out with Mike?
Hanging out, dude.
Let's just hang out.
It's like an old school shooting the shit.
That's all it is. I'm here with Mason, Gun Fu Fighter. That's not formally known. That's known.
No, I guess it's known. I don't know.
You haven't changed it, right?
I haven't changed it, not yet. Okay.
Mason's a good buddy of mine. He actually worked for Philcraft early on, doing training, AI and me on flat ranges years ago. He works for a sheriff's department in Arizona full-time as a SWAT guy, but is tied into politics, tied into like preparedness, tied into everything that's going on in the world. Really well-connected guy. And I wanted to have him on here today to talk to you guys about kind of the LEO perspective with all the things that are going on, especially with Philadelphia. I mean, I just got an update this morning from my intel girl about the latest from Philadelphia, and it's pretty crazy. Let's start off with a small intro, because a lot of people outside of what I just mentioned don't know kind of your background.
Yeah, OG Philcraft, dude. Like,
yeah,
one of the original guys, right? No, I've been in law enforcement for 15 years. Outside of right now, you know, just got out of back surgery, so I'm kind of laying low. But I've been on a full-time tactical team for 5 years now, a little over 5 years now. That's about it, really.
Super busy, proactive full-time team, right?
100%. Yeah, we run between 220 and 320, you know, missions a year. And that's obviously varying. It's not all hard hits and stuff like that. It's a lot of low-level stuff as well. So, but it's, you know, it's a slew of different things.
Weren't you on the sheriff's protection detail?
Yeah, that was years ago.
What was that guy's name?
Joe Arpaio.
Yeah. How was that?
It was eye-opening. It was eye-opening from the political perspective. It was actually during the election year, so it was 2012, and we worked a lot with presidential candidates that were coming into town, and also on, you know, he was obviously doing a lot of political running campaign stuff, so I got to see a lot more than I ever did before in terms of how things operate, how media operates. I was just talking about this last night, being able to see an interview in its entirety, you know, a 2-hour interview, and then being able to watch the 12-minute clip the next day and the difference in perception versus what really happened, what the interview really showed you, and the 12 minutes that particular news station would put out to get what they wanted to portray.
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense?
Joe, Sheriff Joe, what's this, how you say his last name?
Arpaio. Yeah. You got it. Arpaio.
He's the super controversial sheriff that you guys know had, you know, he was putting prisoners or people who are in the jail in pink jumpsuits, making them live in GP mediums,
right?
Which are the tents, the army tents. And his idea was like, hey, if soldiers can do this overseas, then these prisoners, they could live this way too.
Yep.
And so he was known to be hard but fair.
Correct. In fact, I think most of the inmates at that time, like, they enjoyed that because it was outside. And even if it was hot or cold, like, it was outside, and they don't get time a lot of time outside.
Yeah.
So I think a majority of them were like, no, we like the tents.
Yeah.
Area.
What's the first time that I realized, and I had been further educated by you and Mark Lamb, of how important the role of a sheriff
is,
a politically elected official
100%.
Is. Yep. Like, what's your perspective on that?
So it's funny, a lot of people don't, and I talked to Mark extensively on this, but a lot of people don't know the power of the sheriff, right? The sheriff, because city chiefs are appointed, right? So they have to act in accordance with what the city politics wants.
Is that the city council that appoints the chief?
I think it differs from city to city, but yeah, essentially a city council, or they're answering to somebody else. The sheriff is created as an elected position so that he works for the people, right? And so he encompasses the entire county of whatever municipality he's in. What that means is that he has more ability to, let's say, negotiate with the federal government if they were to come into a county. they have to say, hey, I'm coming in to do this. That's his county. So they don't coordinate with the city.
They coordinate with the sheriffs.
Correct. Usually.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if somebody's doing something in a particular city, you're going to obviously notify that city. But the sheriff has more power to make decisions as to yes or no with what a federal agency is doing within that county.
And it's a, like this, the case with Mark Lamb. Mark Lamb, he's the sheriff of Pinal County. He actually is known for that show Live PD.
Correct.
Right? Because he allowed.
That's where he got his.
Yeah.
His momentum, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because he gave access to media and showed them, hey, in full transparency, I'm showing you how we operate because there's nothing to hide.
Well, and he is the sheriff with, it's like Cops, the show Cops, is they're following cops. It was like that show, but the sheriff was actually going out and going to calls and making arrests and whatnot.
That's
so
awesome.
That's like, you know, it's unprecedented.
Well, that's
really
that's the thing. You know, I grew up watching Miami Vice and Cops every like Friday or Saturday night when it came on.
Right.
And it was cool back then to go, oh, Cops are cool, right? Cops have this job and it's cool, and they go after
bad guys.
Bad boys, you know. And then we kind of lost that where we stopped building relationships with people. Because on Cops, you not only saw them knock heads of bad guys, but you also saw them interact with good people.
Correct. Victims a lot of times.
Victims, yeah. Absolutely. You know, something I've always been impressed by you, Mason, is you're very intelligent as a police officer, but you very well articulate in our conversations tactically why law enforcement officers should mitigate risk, especially in the profession of being a special weapons and tactics person, right?
100%.
And what I realized is that's not universal, because there's some elements of law enforcement throughout the United States who they have these hardcore tactics that seemingly and literally sometimes cause more issues because of their tactics versus, I know, your county that mitigate at all means, by all means necessary. And I think we've had conversations where I've said, yeah, but that's stupid, right? And then you explain to me and I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. And then you're not killing bad guys because of the way in which you're tactically operating on the ground. What's your perspective?
Well, I don't think people realize like the law enforcement role when you're trying to like nobody wants to end a life of like somebody, right? Because what if it's like, listen, there's career criminals out there that end up, you know, getting shot or whatever. That's a separate discussion we could have, right? But there's people out there that have made mistakes. They're backed into a corner, essentially. There's plenty of people that have turned that around. So why are we going to, you know, go hammer to nails, like right off the bat? Like, let's mitigate this the best we can. If it comes down to something that's an end that's negative, that happens sometimes, but you should always try to mitigate it. But I think people don't realize when they're watching stuff in the media is that by the time you see that 15 second clip, that's already been mitigated.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing the end result. Like you can only tell somebody something so many times.
Yeah.
If they're not willing to listen, like I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you guys are very good at kind of these rules of engagement via this escalation of force.
100%.
And then have in your own department, have you seen the, I guess the misuse of the use of force policy being manipulated by politicians, or has your department been pretty?
No, I think in general in Arizona, it's been pretty good in terms of, like, we haven't had any like incredibly crazy polarizing cases, obviously, but there's been a few that I see coming up through the pipeline and I'm like, oh, that could be the one, right? That's the one that, like, we have all these cases going around the country that are, you know, sparking controversy. Like, this could be the one if this law enforcement guy ends up getting charged, whereas this is a clear case of whether it be self-defense or, you know, an escalation of force that's proper. And if this guy ends up getting charged, that's going to set a precedent with us, because that's what ends up happening, right?
Yeah.
The cops across the country pay attention to these cases, and they're like, "Dang, dude, that could be me." Like that, I would have most likely, in the heat of the moment, I would have made that same decision. And then this guy ends up getting, you know, they're putting the charges forward. Like that could have easily been me. And so we've had a few of those, but they end up being. They end up not going in that direction, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And you explained to me, I'd like for you to explain it to the audience too, of the difference for the riots or protests that potentially turned, had the potential to turn violent. You described to me the command and control element of law 100%. Enforcement, instilling the confidence in the officers to maintain law and order,
100%.
Which seems to be very different behaviorally than other parts of the country.
Well, if you're in a part of the country and you're in law enforcement and you are with an agency or a city or a county that's allowing, like there could be some of those instances where they just don't have the manpower. That's a different story. But if you have the manpower and you're still allowing all this stuff to happen, it's setting a precedent for those people that are creating the destruction, creating the mayhem, creating the assaults, sometimes even murder. And you're saying, good to go. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Have at it.
Yeah.
Whereas when you stop it, and sometimes you have to use force, but for the most part, I think the agencies that are stopping it are doing it very strategically without, you know, causing injury
and
to anybody, and very professionally.
Yeah.
When you think about what the opposition is doing and you have agencies that aren't hurting anybody, I'd say that's a win, right? But when you allow that to continue to the point where there's, you know, like two deaths on a given night, what does that say to your line dudes? Like, come on, man, let us fix this problem. That's your job, is this created a solution. Here's a criminal problem. I'm going to create a solution to the best of my ability with creating the least amount of damage or harm. Let me go do that. And you're not you're not being allowed to do that, right?
Yeah.
Law and order is, and I hate to put it this simply, but law and order is like raising a child, right? Like raising a 5-year-old. Your 5-year-old, that you need to kind of give them guidance as to what they do when they do something wrong. Be like, hey, you can't do that. But if you just let them do it, they're never going to learn. Like this is unacceptable behavior.
Yeah.
Right.
You're conditioning them to do whatever they want.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily put that completely on them, because if you're not going to stop them, like how can we completely blame it on them for continuing to do it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's got to be demoralizing too, as a law enforcement officer, for those guys who are on the line in places like Portland, Seattle, et cetera, because they joined the police force, most of these guys and gals,
to help, yeah,
to be part of the community and be in some grander purpose in helping those that can't help themselves. And now they're not allowed to do that.
Well, and I think the biggest issue that prevents conversation, because there's no doubt that there can be positive changes in law enforcement. I've said it since I got in and got training outside the office, whether it be firearms, whether it be hand-to-hand combatives. Man, we're undertrained. We're completely undertrained. But the reason that is there's so much, the knowledge base for the average cop is like has to be so vast, and law, case law, shooting, combatives, detective work, just, you know, radio codes. Like there's so much knowledge involved to just send them out to the street. Like your training is at least a year before you're kind of on your own and like, okay, I got this. Like, I'm not going to do this. Even at that point, you're still like it took me like to my 7-year mark where I'm like, all right, I'm pretty confident.
Figuring it out.
I'm pretty confident in what I'm doing right now. And at that point is when you realize how much you don't know. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh dude, I've got this. You're like 2 years on, you're like out there, you know, kicking ass and taking names. And then you get to a point where you're like, you start learning more and more. You're like, oh geez, I don't know anything. Like, I don't know nothing. And then you get to a point where you're like, dude, we need more training. Like, we need a lot more training. So the conversation should come up. Like, how do we get law enforcement dudes more training? And the Graces just did something where just a couple of days ago live where they're trying to get, you know, more chiefs of police and sheriffs involved in the hand-to-hand combatives portion of getting law enforcement better trained.
Yeah.
I think that's good, right? But how do we have a conversation about changing for a positive way if everybody on the opposite side of the conversation is screaming, police brutality, defund the police, based off lies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there are cases where cops do wrong. Let's look at those cases, but let's not put these other cases that are not, they're not factually accurate to the definition of police brutality. Like, this isn't police brutality.
Yeah.
Like, the Philadelphia case is a prime example. Like, I don't know how that one's going to turn out, and I don't have the totality of what happens, but when you watch a video of a guy with a knife chasing down two cops around a car and then he gets shot, like, I'm pretty sure that's going to end up on the cop's favor. And let's pretend that's not even a cop. Let's pretend that's just a citizen. If one person is chasing another dude with a knife and the dude without the knife shoots the dude with a knife.
Self-defense.
It's going to be self-defense.
Yeah.
Like 99.9% of the time. So why is it any different with a law enforcement officer?
Yeah.
Well, he could have tased him. Well, so I'm going to put you in this situation and you're going to think about that like this.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this guy's got a knife. What if you tase him and you miss?
Yeah. Or you have your gun out and then you got to put your gun away.
Yeah. Do you know the statistics of how often a taser actually works? Because that's the thing. There's so much ignorance. Like the Joe Biden, he said, we'll just shoot him in the leg. And the femoral artery is like, excuse me?
You want to blink
like
him out.
You don't care about me. Like,
yeah,
it's ignorance and it's confident ignorance. That's the biggest issue of it is so confident. Yeah. Just shoot him in the leg.
Yeah. And then everybody's like, just
shoot him in the leg.
Why would you not shoot him in the leg?
That totally makes sense. Whereas if legitimately, if you or I didn't know about a subject, we're like, I'm not going to speak on that. I really don't know enough about that, right?
Yeah.
Whereas there's so many people, and you could say this on both sides of the spectrum, do this. And you have no clue. Zero clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating. That's hard to get somebody, that's hard to get two organizations or two thought processes to come in the middle and say, hey, what can we do to legitimately make a change?
Yeah.
When the people in the middle are like, hey, we need more training, which means more funding. And the crazy sides of the spectrum are like, nah, defund the police. Like,
yeah.
How does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, specifically, let's break down on the Philadelphia stuff a little bit because I want to know if, you know, maybe I can get the video guys to drop this video in this part of the queue, which is a video of Philadelphia police officers arriving on the scene of this call, which originally was called as a domestic.
Yeah, see, and I didn't even know the original call. Yeah. I just saw the video.
Yo, this shit is crazy on me.
It was a domestic call and it happened at 4 p.m. This is only 48 hours ago. And when they arrived, immediately the guy was already running around with a knife in his hand,
right.
A butcher knife.
Fairly large knife.
Knife. And immediately the law enforcement officers told him to drop the knife. And they started retreating to create distance.
Correct.
And they did so even moving tactfully around obstacles, which included vehicles.
Right.
And he continued to track them. One of the unfortunate things of the video, if you're seeing it now, is the mother of the suspect, Mr. Wallace, was being pursued by the mother who was telling the police officers not to shoot him and then telling the son to stop. And he wouldn't stop.
Even for his mom.
Even for his own mother. And then he pursues the police officers. At this time, I believe there's two officers on the scene of the original call. And and they back off. And as they get into the open street, he starts moving towards them, and then he lifts his arm like he's going to stab them.
Right.
And then they shoot him. They fire 14 shots total. Several of the rounds impacted him in the arm and the chest. And what I didn't like about that video is the fact that they allowed the mother and other people to go up to him.
Right.
But they couldn't stop it. They seemed to be in a precarious situation where they're kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people there. A lot of people around him.
There's a mob of people surrounding them.
Right.
Which, you know, one of the police officers actually picks him up and puts him in his patrol car and takes him to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. The law enforcement officers on the scene started getting pelted with bricks and violently assaulted, which turns into a full-blown riot.
Correct.
And last night on YouTube, on a live feed, I listed out some of the things that were listed, including larceny, burglary, assault on police officers, a whole bunch of slew of charges that had nothing to do with protesting.
Nothing to do with
it. There are videos of about 1,000 people rioting and raiding a Walmart and stealing as much TVs, shoes, which I don't know what kind of shoes you would get at Walmart. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I mean, that's like the
they're going to last like 2 months.
Yeah, the Yikes. There's no even name brand shoes at Walmart. So you get all these people protesting, and then 30 plus police officers wind up being injured, including a 56-year-old female police officer who was run over by a person who broke her leg in running her over and almost killed her. And I think to myself, like the problem, the biggest problem for me is the media and as they report it. CNN's headline was African-American man shot second day of protests or something like that. Well, one, it's not protest.
Clickbait.
Yeah, it's violent riots and violent acts of criminal activity across the spectrum. And it wasn't just police officers shooting an African-American.
Right.
It was officers defending their lives in the line of duty.
So let's take that right there, right? Just look at what you just said. So I've already admitted, like, there is positive changes that we can make in law enforcement, whether it be training or de-escalation. Like, we can always change. Like, we'll always be better. You can never admit that anything could not be better.
Yeah.
How do we make it better, or have a conversation about making it better with what you just said?
Yeah.
Self-defense case, riots, looting, and more people injured 24 hours than the guy that was injured in the case itself. Like, how do we come to the table if that's what happens every time?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, business as usual.
Yeah.
Let's go back to doing things like we've always done. And you have people out there trying to advocate the Gracie's Breaking Barriers United, that is a law enforcement guy that's always trying to, you know, bridge the gap between law enforcement and civil. But even like, I can sense frustration in even those people. Like, come on, like, we're trying to make a difference here. And then it just boils over again.
Yeah. The biggest problem that I heard out of this case was immediately the chief of police, the mayor, and I think the governor even chimed in, less political about it. All Democrats, by the way, including the chief and the mayor, and openly stated that there was a problem. Like, the problem belonged to the police department. Like, there was an issue that they needed to be addressed. No, it was a clear cut case of self-defense. And if the messaging was that, then, and they got out there ahead of it, like, you know, this is the sheriff of Sacramento County in Sacramento, California, who was super aggressive, getting ahead of the media and saying, listen, this is not what's happening in our backyard. The law and order will be maintained. Doing it the complete opposite of what the media expects, instead of facilitating that, you have the media being enabled, and then the messaging becomes disruptive. Maybe the community is watching the headlines. I would assume so in many cases. And then they're getting incited by all this violence and all this activity.
And I think that's the biggest issue, is the immediate response of people on the scene that maybe don't agree with what just happened. And then that gets to the media, and then the media portrays whatever's going to get them clicks, or it's not new. Like, let's report what happened. No, let's report what's going to get us more views. And that's the ultimate enemy, right? I mean, you go back to the Jacob Blake case that was not too long ago. Like, like when I first saw the video, even I was like, oh, geez, this is going to be a bad, this might be a bad case, because they only showed 15 seconds of a very massive incident.
Yeah.
Where a black male who appears to be unarmed because it's a distant video is just simply walking to a car and then gets shot in the back. However yeah. many times, right? Yeah. And gets paralyzed. And and the media is like, oh, black man's just trying to walk to his car, gets shot in the back 7 times. Like, that's the clickbait.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what happened though. Mm. But they want to get ahead of it and get this information out so they can get clicks. Well, that's inherently dangerous to give that kind of false information out on during a time like this where people are like starting riots based off of information you're giving them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you don't give them any information until there is more information, that's going to benefit all of us, right? Because then the riots don't start. Like, I don't know.
I you know, one of the objectives from the very get-go from American Tendency in the back of my head, which is I guess very noble but probably unrealistic, is creating a news cycle or a news platform that doesn't create subjective news, that's very objective about the reporting of what actually took place. But again, it's hard to compete when it's a popularity contest.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because I told you I was talking to my cousin last night, right? And she's a Democrat. But we always have fairly good conversations about politics and stuff, right? She wants to hear my point of view. And I'm not a right winger, right? I feel that I'm right leaning in the center. That's is my view on things. Literally, I could have recorded her and then said, this lady's talking about Trump. Like, it was the exact same rhetoric you hear on one side, but she was talking about the left, right? So it just goes to show, like, in modern era, the media is feeding you whatever you want to hear, right? Mm. So if you're a major Trump supporter, you're going to hear positive stuff about Trump and negative stuff about Biden. If you are a Biden supporter, you're going to hear tons of positive about Biden and tons of negative about Trump. Mm. And you're going to form your opinion based off of that, which might not even be real. Like, she asked me, what do you think of the election? Is there going to be violence? And I go, well, I think if Trump gets elected, I think there might be. And she's like, interesting. I was thinking the exact opposite, she said.
The
complete opposite. She thought, it was 100% believed that if Biden won, that Trump supporters were going to be the violent agitators.
Really?
Like, armed militia, we're going to like fill the streets and protest. And I was like, but just in that instance, it dawned on me, like, this, like, that's how the media controls us. That's how the media controls us. And they show us and feed us what, because I guarantee, you know, we see Antifa and all this rioting and using bike locks against people and all this stuff. I guarantee in her feed, she's seeing militia protests, dudes in kits.
Oh, that's what a they good are. Point.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Like, she's being fed the exact opposite of what conservatives are being fed on their feed of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, right? Mm. So in her head, she's like, yeah, dude, if Biden wins, it's going to be pandemonium and it's going to be a bunch of Trump supporters, like, just out assaulting people.
Wow.
And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, I want, yeah, at first you're like, no, that's not what's going to happen. It's this. But then I was like, I stepped back for a second, like, dude,
yeah,
there's probably half of America that feel the way she is right now.
That's media control.
Media control.
Yeah.
Absolute media control.
When you look at how to affect change and the things that you can do based on your own control, like, how do you make sense of seemingly a chaotic world in your own way, in your own life?
Well, it's interesting. I've thought about that a few times over the last, because like with COVID and the riots and the election cycle and all this stuff, you look at your feeds of media, which essentially is our news feeds now, right? Twitter, Instagram, all this. That's where we get our news for the most part. Like all the news stations are obsolete essentially, unless you have TV, which I don't even have.
Yeah,
so the only thing I get is off of feeds, and it's chaos. It's chaos everywhere. But if you go outside, you go to the market, you go have dinner, do you see any of it?
Nothing.
Nothing, yeah. Right? So is it really chaos, or is that what they want us to believe, that it's chaos? Or is it super small, isolated incidents? Like Philadelphia is burning right now. Mm. But is 95% of the rest of the country burning? Mm. But that's all we see. So we think it's all ending right now. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's ending right now.
Doom and gloom right now.
Doom and gloom, right? So how do we stop that other than just shutting down all media sources? So we'll like go out and like hang out with our neighbor again.
Yeah.
Like, how do we do that? How do we get to that point again?
You know, the Senate grilled all the CEOs recently of the major tech companies talking about this Section 230. You know, it's a 96 legacy law to basically protect these companies and give them immunity so they're not prosecuted or they're not persecuted for filtering any kind of information because as a private entity.
Right.
And the inherent problem is there's some verbiage issues that I see. But a lot of the problem I see, especially being a conservative, is this suppression or this bias towards conservative voices. And it was interesting to see those hearings because they adamantly denied it. I mean, just straight up said, we don't do that. My personal account's been suppressed. American Contingency was deleted.
Twice. Yeah.
Just restored.
How did that happen, by the way?
Well,
just random?
Kind of randomly. I mean, we had an insider that knows the chief of operations of Facebook, so that helps. But what it got rolled up in my accounts are moderated by an office in Dublin, Ireland, which is crazy. But they just shut it down because it's a blanket. You know, hey, we're suppressing all these accounts. I mean, USA Today just reported the information from a study that was done calling American Contingency a militia.
Yeah.
Like, we're white, right?
I've heard you're a terrorist organization too.
It's insane. And the fact that national media is picking this up and that American Contingency is being named as a militia, to me, is comical. I don't even,
100%.
Like, guys are like, you should sue them. I'm like, I don't even care. Like,
yeah.
Am I going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars pursuing some fake bias media?
Yeah.
It's just a way of our life now. Well, and you look at all these things that are taking place, it's literally happening. You've seen it on your own stuff, and then they just adamantly deny it.
Yep.
So when I think about how we move forward, it bums me out that I haven't seen any moderate conservatives, meaning somewhere around the center,
right?
Not far right wing,
right?
Not Breitbart, not Blaze TV,
right?
But somewhere in the middle,
yeah.
Stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, we're going to create this.
Right.
And, you know, I'm tied to a whole bunch of wealthy people and I'm trying to like proactively, hey, dude,
get them to step up.
I will put together the team. I am so passionate about this. I just don't have $1 billion to make it happen. Is that the fix? I mean, is that the start point to a fix? Where do we go?
I don't even know. I don't even know the answer to that question. And it's interesting because and here's a shameless plug for Joe Rogan, but lately I've been trying to watch a lot more of the leadership in the country in terms of media. And he invites a lot of left and right onto his show, right? So I try to listen to, and I feel like he's got a like open mind about, like, he's a liberal, but he's open-minded. Like, he can be convinced that like, that's a logical statement or whatever when it comes to stuff. And I was watching a video, and I don't know how old it is, and I didn't get finished with it, but it was literally two Twitter executives, Joe Rogan, and then I forget this other guy, he's got like a million YouTube subscribers or whatever, and they were talking about suppression. And the scary part is, you said they deny it all, but listening to this interview with these Twitter executives that are kind of in charge, I guess, of banning people and making sure the rules are followed of Twitter. And I don't know that it's whether they're denying or they legitimately don't believe it.
Yeah.
Like they don't believe that they're suppressing it. And the point one of the guys on there was trying to make is like your rules by themselves are inherently left-leaning.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah, and they're like, no. This, you know, like we've done this study and we did this study and we showed that this, you know, this happens. Yeah. And so we made this rule. And the guy's like, yeah. But that rule, in the same day, you could have somebody discussing a transgender issue and one person gets blocked. And the same exact afternoon, somebody threatens to kill somebody and they don't get blocked.
Yeah.
Like your rules are flawed. They're inherently left-leaning because of your thought process and your opinions. And I was like, damn.
That's true, though.
And they were like, well, and you kind of see like they like a little bit of a rebuttal. And then they're like, I'll have to look into that. Because they're like, well, maybe.
Well, when you're insulated inside of Silicon Valley in a bubble, the world around you, which is the cubicle across from you, seems like reality.
Right.
And that's not how the rest of the world thinks. I mean, I look at American Contingency, right? And how American Contingency on Instagram was banned at American Contingency and then at USA Contingency.
Right.
And what we were doing was advertising what banners, what periodicals, what newsletters, what posts were being made about potentially violent acts against people. We're saying literally, it's time to take back the streets, burn it and burn it down, or bring your best A game because we're destroying this.
Well, place. And that's the interesting thing, right? The media you were talking about before that's labeling you a terrorist or whatever, like this militia, right? They're saying to you or to people that here's this organization that's putting out, okay, this is what's going to happen in this area. Let's go fight them.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
Yeah.
It's American Contingency from its core is a source of information for survival, right?
Yeah.
So many people out there are like, I did a questionnaire on an account the other day and somebody's like, hey, you pull up to intersection or you're coming up to an intersection. There's a protest in the middle of the road. Like, what do you do? Right. Mm-hmm. And there is a small group of people. They're like, burn it down, run them over. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like the point is to avoid these interactions, right? To the like, okay, so can you park and walk home and figure out a ride later? Like to avoid violence, right?
Yeah.
And so by putting out information on American Contingency, like at this location, like stay home.
Yeah.
Don't go near this location on this particular day.
Yeah.
It's a mechanism of survival. Like you're not saying go to this location and fight these people that are saying that they want violence. Like, yeah, that would be a negative militia thing. You're saying, hey, if you live in this area and you're planning on going to this particular area for dinner with your family or whatever,
avoid it at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Pick a different day. And I think, I don't know how that's getting lost in translation.
I know.
I don't get it.
I've been very clear in the messaging, and I've also been very clear on how we communicate that across the spectrum. But it just seems to fall. That's what bums me out the most, right? Because it's like I feel like every day that we're involved in this, we're doing good.
Yeah.
And I want to retain that feeling for me and the guys and gals that work for us, because that's the truth.
Yeah.
You can't taint the truth.
Well, and that's even like that's bipartisan. You're giving this information to left and right.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if you're a liberal transgender male that's now a female, I'm giving this information to you too. Like, don't go down there and get assaulted.
Yeah.
Like, take your significant other somewhere else that night for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, don't put yourself in the predicament that now you may have to defend yourself. If you avoid that situation, there's a guarantee you won't have to defend yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's my biggest push on the survival side of my account is that number one position in self-defense is avoidance. If you can avoid being in a self-defense encounter by avoiding certain areas, avoiding, high crime areas or avoiding protests that may become violent, like do that. That's your first avenue of self-defense is not even getting in it in the first place.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people fail to realize. Like, especially with American Contingency, like we're giving information out to everyone for free.
Yeah.
Like this is a survival mechanism that we're giving you because we feel that you need this. Everyone. Doesn't matter, liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican, like follow this account, get the information, push it out.
Yeah.
Not avoid this area.
Not according to USA Today.
Not throw your kid on and grab your M4 and head down to this area and like fight them.
When AMCON is in the same sentence as Proud Boys, that bums me the hell out, man. Because I don't even know what those guys are about. But
the chairman, the national chairman, we just talked about this last night too.
Yeah.
Because like I didn't know a lot about them, and I heard somebody say, "Oh yeah, white Proud Boys, white supremacy." So I'm like. I could have swore
he's a black guy, right?
I could have sworn I just saw a video about this dude and he was black and he was like, yeah, I don't know how I got turned into white supremacist. So I looked it up. Sure enough, dude, he's like a black Cuban dude. I don't know. Outside of that, I don't know anything about the Proud Boys, but again, that's misinformation, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, let's make this organization a white supremacist organization because they're against us.
Yeah.
And that's a sexy term to get people on our side. Oh, anti. Yeah, of course. Who isn't against white supremacy?
Like,
you'd have to be an idiot not to, but if you use that term, automatically sparks controversy.
Yeah. And that spikes analytics.
Yeah. I'm sure they've probably said it about American Contingency. Just so you guys know, Mike's Korean.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work.
An Israeli publication called me a right-wing white supremacist. Oh, I'm like,
unbelievable.
You probably should recant that.
I mean, I know you wear cowboy boots and like NASCAR, but you still are Korean.
I'm a redneck Korean dude. So I wanted to ask you this because I think when I think of how we really affect change, it's needed. And we had jokingly talked about it before about you running for sheriff.
Oh,
and we're 3 years out from that cycle. And you know, if you really want to affect change, you have to be prepared to step up and provide leadership. And you have to understand how social media works. You have to understand public relations. You have to understand public perception. And you're somebody who I think has all those things lined out and understands the big picture. On top of that, you're getting old, man. You hurt your back. But is that something that's maybe potentially in the future for you?
I'm not a fan of saying the word never. But that's a hard.
Is that how you're gonna start this conversation?
That's a hard sell, dude.
Why?
That's a hard. Well, here, let's talk about it. And I have breakfast with Mark Lamb like once a month.
Yeah.
And that dude's life is turned upside down for being the sheriff. And yeah, he's running again. He's winning again. He's unopposed.
Yeah.
But like, that's a small county, right? It's not. And he's still like. You got to think look at all the misinformation we just talked about. Like that immediately happens to you. As a politician, regardless of what position you're trying to get, there's going to be people out there that are immediately going to start lying about you, attacking your family, attacking your children, attacking your character, attacking your morals, like instantaneously to defeat you because you're on the opposite side of what they want, right?
But you handle that better than any social media influencer kind of person I've ever seen though.
See, but that's here's this conversation right here is the biggest issue with change. There's people out there that quite possibly could be phenomenal people for change if put in the right leadership positions. Mm. And they're like, dude, I don't want that stress. The people that like, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that could affect change and they do it and they go and they want to do it. But I don't think it's that big. I think it's a super small percentage of them. I think a lot of people in modern times that get into politics, they just want like, they want the power of it.
Yeah.
Right. They want to get into it for the right reasons. And then they get in there like, dude, I can't make any change. I'm just going to do the quid pro quo. Like, I'm just going to do what everybody else is doing now.
Yeah.
And they don't make change because there's not enough of them.
But you wouldn't do that.
Of course not. But that means I would have to, I'd have to accept all that stuff. And I don't know that I want to put my family through that. Like, could you make, I don't know, maybe. That's a hard sell. That's definitely a hard sell.
Well, I can see. I mean, people have asked me, like, you should go into politics, and the answer is hell to the no. Like, I would never do it.
Same. Yeah. It's no different. Like, I could put it back on you, and you're like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Like, it ain't about money. Like, you could have a business. Like, and even then, right? You have a business on the side, and then that's going to get attacked.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're double dipping, and you're doing all this stuff, and you're using that to do this.
Trump's a perfect
this.
Example.
All over the place. Like, that immediately that's going to start, especially if you have a business on the side.
Yeah, and I don't want the power. I think the private sector is so much more effective in being able to affect change in a positive way. I mean, Joe Rogan's a perfect example of that, right? I mean, the amount of people he influences via his own specific likes and desires via his audience, super impactful. And so even us on a smaller scale with American Contingency are able to affect lives literally on a national scale. But I just see a guy like you who's lived that life, even looking at the tail end of your career and what you could accomplish even in one cycle. And I feel like that you're the kind of person that needs to step up. But again, justifying me, you could say the same.
Well, I do believe that that's where, kind of side note, like in law enforcement in general, like how do we make changes in law enforcement that are positive while everybody outside is using these cases that aren't, that like, that's not what should be talking about. Yeah, we do need to make change, but that's not this was justified. Let's not talk about that case. Let's find other cases that weren't justified, that aren't even being talked about. Let's talk about, because it's a white guy, and let's talk about these cases and talk about how to change to make that not happen again. But that's not what sells newspapers. That's not what sells the articles, right? But in order to make those changes, I think we need better leadership from the top. That's hard because the people don't pick leadership in law enforcement outside of the sheriff. And that's like major metropolitan area could have 14, 15, 25 cities within it. So you have one sheriff. Yeah, maybe that guy's a good leader, but the 17 cities within it are just chiefs that are, yeah, whatever you say, town council, whatever you say, city council, yes, I'll do whatever you want. And like, that's not leadership. If they're always scared of losing their position because they were assigned by the city council, and so they're always looking over their shoulder to be like, oh crap, I'm gonna get fired if I do this.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna stand up to it. Like nobody's going to say, no, this is what we need to do. We don't need to defund ourselves. We need to add more money. We need to add training here. We need to add training here. That guy needs to be on admin leave because that's a legitimate case. You guys aren't even talking about that. You're trying to fire this guy and arrest this guy for doing his job. People need to stand up and say that, but they're too afraid to, because if I do, this particular, you know, left-leaning city councilor is going to fire me. And they're just going to put somebody else in there.
Well, you need to be
that'll
the governor.
That'll do their bidder.
Running for governor then, Mason.
You're going to have me trying to run for president before this interview's over.
Just make me the Secretary of Defense. That's all I want to do. So you have a whole bunch of stuff on social media. You have a whole bunch of accounts that you manage and the stuff that you do. What are those accounts, and then where can people find you?
So I got tons of them, and I don't manage them all appropriately, but my personal account right now is Gunpoo Fighter. And you can look that up anywhere, like whether it be YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, it's all Gunpoo Fighter, essentially, which is easy. So
what about Gunpoo Fighting?
Yeah, that is another account. I did that account more of an account that can show self-defense or use of force issues, law enforcement and otherwise, to, you know, you're talking about preparedness and survival, like to open people's eyes to the fact that the violence is out there. Like if you're in suburbia and you're like, it's no big deal. I don't need to carry a gun. I don't need to carry a tourniquet. I don't need to carry all this stuff. You guys are just paranoid, crazy people. Well, let me show you this.
Show you the reality.
Yeah, here's 120 videos over the last year all across the world of violence happening when you don't even think it's coming.
Yeah.
So, and going back to what I said before, avoidance, first of all. And then after that, let's talk about preparedness, self-defense, firearm, you know, what happens after? What happens when you've talked about it 1,000 times, you're in a car accident. Do you have like, okay, guns aren't gonna solve nothing there. Like, do you have a tourniquet? Do you have medical supplies? What if you're not the one injured? What if your kid's injured? What if the other car you hit's injured or they hit you, right? So it's very similar, but more along the lines of the self-defense part of survival than just simply survival.
Make sure you guys check out Gun Fu Fighter Mason on Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, all over the planet. You guys, or you and your team do a good job of getting that information out there. I want to say thank you for coming up on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You flew up here and I appreciate you coming to town. We got a couple of things to do. We're going to run around town and go talk to Mark Twite and do some stuff for Living Your Prep Life on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe and like. Until next time. Thanks, guys.